Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water.
Yama, and welcome to NITV Radio. Bertrand Tungandami ngaya. I am Bertrand Tungandami.
And Wadamuli, I'm Kerry Lee Harding.
Coming up in your program this Wednesday, the 8th of May, we have a conversation with Susanna Day, the CEO of The Torch, and artist Flick Chefer Smith, sharing their insights into this year's confined exhibition, an event that provides a dedicated space for First Nations people who have experienced incarceration to share their stories, culture, and lived experiences through the artworks they produce. We also have a conversation between Biripaiman, Andy Saunders, and Living Black Scala Grant. Well, Biripaiman Andy Saunders shares his story in this conversation on how he went from being a comedian to becoming a handyman. Quite a rare feat. In today's program, we also explore changes to the carer support payments, which the government says will allow carers greater flexibility in the hours they can work. All these stories and more coming to you after the latest news presented by Kerry Lee Harding.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
In this bulletin, Clean Energy Symposium puts Indigenous Australians at the forefront of Australia's energy transition. Treasurer Jim Chalmers says Australians can expect a restrained and measured budget. And AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine withdrawn from markets worldwide. First Nations Clean Energy Symposium is looking to ensure Indigenous Australians are central to the nation's energy transition. Co-chair of the First Nations Clean Energy Network, Karina Nolan, says there is strong potential to build on 15 established First Nations Clean Energy Project partnerships. She is among the 40-odd speakers at a First Nations Clean Energy Symposium in Adelaide on Wednesday and Thursday. The event will focus on ensuring First Nations communities are central in Australia's energy transition and highlight the need for swift action. It brings together hundreds of First Nations leaders and community members, representatives of government, industry and unions, and academics and experts. Treasurer Jim Chalmers says the Australian public should expect a measured budget to manage inflation. He says there will be cost of living assistance for Australians, but insists such measures must not contribute to worsening inflation. He told ABCRN the government has already made positive steps for the economy, including bringing down debt and delivering the first surplus in 15 years. Dr. Chalmers added that he's in frequent conversation with RBA Governor Michelle Bullock.
I really respect the difficult job that Governor Bullock has to do. I believe that she respects the difficult job that I have to do and that we have to do in the budget. We don't tell each other how to do each other's jobs. But we are on the same page when it comes to getting inflation down, because it is inflation which is punishing people, and that's why the progress we've made is so important. And that's why it's so important that we shoot for this second surplus and that we design our cost of living policies in a way that put downward pressure on inflation rather than upward pressure on inflation.
This comes as the Reserve Bank left the cash rate unchanged at 4.35% on May 7th, following a two-day meeting of the RBA's board members. And Prime Minister Anthony Albanese is speaking at a business summit in Western Australia, promoting renewable energy and the government's Future Made in Australia Act. The PM says it's vital that Australia promotes domestic manufacturing and investment to enhance national capabilities. He says Western Australia has an important role in this future, including in critical minerals and infrastructure. Mr. Albanese said investment in renewable energy will be a key focus of the upcoming federal budget, flagging tax changes and hundreds of millions of dollars in energy investment.
Being able to power refining, processing and manufacturing with clean energy becomes more valuable for sellers. More and more Australians make use of renewable energy in their daily lives. And by using clean energy to power heavy industry, we can make Australia a renewable energy superpower.
COVID-19 vaccine AstraZeneca is being withdrawn from shelves worldwide. The UK Telegraph reports the vaccine can no longer be used in the European Union after the company voluntarily withdrew its marketing authorisation. The application to withdraw the vaccine was made on March the 5th and came into effect on May the 7th, according to the report, which adds that similar applications would be made in the United Kingdom and other countries that had approved the vaccine, known as Vaxzevria, in the coming months. The AstraZeneca vaccine has come under intense scrutiny in recent months over a very rare side effect which causes blood clots and low blood platelet counts. AstraZeneca is yet to respond to a request for comment. And China's foreign ministry has accused Australia of acting in a threatening way near Chinese airspace. This comes as Australia condemned the actions of a Chinese jet fighter after it dropped flares in front of a Navy helicopter, with the Prime Minister labelling it unprofessional and unacceptable. An Australian Navy Seahawk helicopter was forced to take evasive action to prevent being hit by flares launched by a J-10 Chinese Air Force plane on Saturday evening, according to Defence Minister Richard Miles. Senator Matt Canavan has told Channel 9 it's vital to stand up for the rights of all countries to use international airspace.
So, I mean, the statement from the Chinese government there admits that the Australian aircraft wasn't in their airspace, and it's a bit rich for China to be upset about an aircraft going close to their airspace, not in their airspace, close to it, when their own military regularly flies through Taiwanese airspace on a daily basis. What we have to do right now here is be very clear about what we stand for and the status of our relationships with other countries around the world.
The United States Assistant Under Secretary of State Daniel Crittenbrink said China's military was expected to act in a safe and professional manner. And a Hamas official has warned there will be no ceasefire deal if Israel's military offensive in Rafah continues. A statement from the group said Osama Hamdan's comments were made during a press conference in Beirut as a delegation of Hamas arrived in Cairo from Doha to continue ceasefire negotiations. Israeli forces have seized the main border crossing between Egypt and southern Gaza, shutting down an aid route into the Palestinian enclave that is already on the brink of famine. Head of the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in the occupied Palestinian territory, Andrea Di Domenico, says the closure of the Rafah border bears serious humanitarian consequences.
The closure of Rafah crossing has severed access to fuel for humanitarian activities, the entry of critical humanitarian items, and curtailed the movement of staff. Protection of civilians for us remain essential, of course, as it is humanitarian assets and supplies, and we are seeking assurances from all parties to the conflict that they should help us to protect those and ensure respect of civilians.
But Israeli officials say a deal can still be achieved with Hamas for a ceasefire in Gaza, even though the ground offensive in Rafah has already begun. The conditions of the agreement have yet to be made public, but one of the main terms is considered to be the release of the remaining hostages captured during the October 7 raids. Israeli army footage showed tanks rolling through the Rafah crossing complex and the Israeli flag raised on the Gaza side. Benjamin Netanyahu said seizing the crossing was a very significant step towards Israelis' stated aim of destroying Hamas' military capabilities. This comes as the head of the Humanitarian Services for Oxfam Australia, Lucia Goldsmith, is calling on the Australian government to put more pressure on Israel to not proceed with the ground offensive in Rafah. It comes after Israel carried out strikes in Rafah and told Palestinians to evacuate parts of the city, which has been a refuge for more than a million displaced people. Ms. Goldsmith says the federal government can be doing more to help Gaza receive more aid.
There is a lot more that could be done in terms of pressure on Israel to allow more aid to enter into Gaza, as well as political pressure on Israel to not proceed with the offensive.
And TikTok and its Chinese parent company ByteDance have filed a lawsuit in the US federal court seeking to block a law signed by President Joe Biden that would force the divestiture of the short-form video app used by 170 million Americans. The companies on Tuesday filed their lawsuit in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, arguing that the law violates the U.S. Constitution on a number of grounds, including challenging First Amendment free speech protections. The law, signed by Biden on April 24, gives ByteDance until January 19 to sell TikTok or face a ban. The lawsuit said the divestiture is simply not possible, not commercially, not technologically, and not legally. The White House has said it wants to see Chinese-based ownership ended on national security grounds, but not a ban on TikTok. The White House and Justice Department declined to comment on the lawsuit. And the president, as we now look at sport, the president of the Australian Olympic Committee believes plans for the Brisbane Olympics are still in good shape, despite the Queensland government ruling out the construction of a new stadium for the Games. Head of the Australian Olympic Committee, Ian Chesterman, told Channel 9 he's not concerned about a change of government as the Games are still 8 years away. Both major parties have ruled out construction of a brand new Victoria Park Stadium, as well as proposals to rebuild the Gabba Stadium. Mr. Chesterman told Channel 9 any plans are up to Queenslanders to decide on.
I can understand that Brisbane people might want that, but it's really up to the Brisbane people through their government to decide what facilities are built in Queensland. When I gave the speech at our annual general meeting on the weekend, my focus is actually about the legacy of these games for people and the way that these games can be used to inspire the next generation.
And now a look at today's weather across this beautiful nation of ours. Perth, sunny, 25. Adelaide, similar conditions, 23 today. Melbourne, in Nam, partly cloudy, 17. Hobart, much the same, 17 degrees. Canberra, cloudy, 17. Wollongong, showers, 19. Sydney, much the same and 21 degrees. Newcastle, shower or two, 22 degrees today. And Brisbane, shower or two, 25. Cairns, showers and 29. And Darwin today, mostly sunny and 33 degrees.
NITV Radio, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 1 p.m. or anytime online.
I'm Bertrand Tungandame and you're listening to NITV Radio, broadcasting from Nam on the Kulin Nation this Wednesday afternoon. Still to come in your program, Andy Saunders, a Beery Pie man, shares his story with Living Black Scholar Grant on how he went from being a comedian to becoming a handyman. Quite a rare journey. In today's program, we also have a story exploring changes to the carer support payments, which the government says will allow carers greater flexibility in the hours they can work. But first, conversation with Susanna Day, CEO of The Torch, and artist Flick Jeffer Smith, sharing insights into this year's confined exhibition. The Torch's Confined Exhibition is back for 15th consecutive yearly edition, with a diverse array of over 400 artworks by more than 380 artists. The event provides a dedicated space for First Nations people who have experienced incarceration in Victoria to share their stories, culture, and lived experiences through the artworks they produce. To get some insights into Confined 15 and The Torch's work, I'm joined by CEO Susanna Day and artist Flicka Jeffer Smith. Ladies, before we delve into the exhibition and The Torch's work, just maybe let's start by a quick introduction to our listeners.
Hi, my name's Susanna Day. I'm a proud Matu woman originally from WA, living in Nam now for about 8 years, and I am the CEO of The Torch in a joint leadership with our creative director and founder, Kent Morris.
And I'm Flick Chaser Smith. I'm a Ngunnawal woman from South Australia. I am recently started the role of female Indigenous arts officer. I've been working with The Torch for about 3-4 years now in a finance role, but have recently changed to deliver the program to women in community and in prison, like it was delivered to me when I started off as a participant of the program.
Flick, it's the first time we have you on our program, so we'll get to learn more about the artwork that you entered, not entered, that's part of this exhibition. But let's go back to Susanna. What are some of the key themes or stories that are explored through the artworks in this year's Confined?
Yeah, we're up to our 15th exhibition now, so we're really trying to keep it fresh every year. We try and reinvent the curation of the show. It's a huge show with 430 works from different mediums, mostly paintings, but we've got a huge amount of wooden works this year, and we also have weaving and ceramics. So at the centre of Confined 15 is its beating heart, and the theme that we've discussed this year is country. So countless times over the past two centuries, the connection of our mobs to our country has been denied through separations, removals and displacement. So we wanted to look at how actually, even through all of this separation, the connection that we have to country is unbreakable. So radiating out from that central theme of country this year, we've got works discussing and exploring kinship, belongings, waterways, animals and birds. So, and it's all been inspired by the hero image, which is called Ceremony Grounds by Wadi Wadi Wamba Wamba artist Jake Herbie.
Wow. So more than 430. It's all, you know, just breaks records year in, year out. A huge number of participants. Let's go straight to Flick. Can you share with us stories of transformation you've witnessed through your involvement in the program?
Yeah, absolutely. So I can confidently share my personal experience. I became a participant of The Torch, an artist with The Torch, back in 2018, I think it was, during my last sentence. That's when I sold my first painting and began to explore my style. I predominantly do a bit of geometric designs with stories of my past or stories from my culture that have been passed down to me throughout my artworks. Once I was released, I was offered a position as an accounts assistant, and I've been with the team for quite a while now. And yeah, recently moved into an arts officer role, so that full circle cycle where I get to go back and inspire women and show them that it's possible, and they can do anything that they want as long as they set their minds to it and stick to it.
That's very rare. To my knowledge, you're only maybe the second inmate allowed to return to actually inspire others and help them reintegrate in the community.
No, I'm the first female torch participant to go back in as an arts officer into the prison. So, yeah, pretty exciting and proud moment to be that person.
Yeah, no, that's just testimony that through hard work and programs like the Torch, meaningful participation in the community can be restored, and you're just a living, example of that tremendous work that the Torch does. Going back to the curation, Susanna, what are some of the challenges you faced in curating and presenting an art exhibition of this scale?
We're absolutely challenged year on year with space. We have to put in a size quota limit for our artists in prison because the space just can't handle the size and the ambition and the aspirations that our in-prison artists have for their artwork. So we actually have a 1 meter size limit, which is a real shame. You know, we would actually love to allow people to paint the size that they would like to paint. So every year, the number of artists that are part of the show is a challenge. But obviously, it's an open access exhibition. We want as many artists as humanly possible to be able to have the opportunity to sell their work and to exhibit their work. Being able to exhibit your work is an extraordinary thing. So many of our artists never imagined they'd ever be part of something like an art exhibition and have their work published in a professional catalogue that's published through Wilkinson Publishing. So it's a really extraordinary opportunity, and we don't want to stop anyone being able to be part of it. But year on year, we are challenged by just the sheer number of artworks and the ambition of our artists.
To be reminded to our listeners that 100% of the funds through the sale of the artworks, 100% is given back to the participants. And it makes a really huge contribution in allowing them to support their families and also on their journey towards meaningful rehabilitation and return to society as properly contributing members of the society. Now, what are the ways that members of the public can best engage with and support the combined exhibition and the importance of the work that the Torch organisation does?
During combined exhibition, so we're down at Glen Eira City Council Gallery, Monday to Friday from 10 to 4:30, and on the weekends we've got from 1 to 5, we have some live painting and some activities that are on display for people to come have a yarn, get to know some of the artists. Also, you can jump online on our Facebook, Instagram, and we've got our online website, thetorch.org.au, where you can view all of the beautiful artworks that our artists have to offer.
Now, the last week of Confined 15 coincides with National Reconciliation Week. How does this timing add an extra layer of meaning and importance to the exhibition?
Every year, Confined attempts to connect with Reconciliation Week and overlap with the dates of Reconciliation Week. My feeling about Rec Week is very much that it's about non-Indigenous allies standing side by side with us as mob and finding ways that they can show us that they stand with our fight to close the gap. I think that this year I'd suggest that it probably is a nod to the referendum and how many Australians were quite angry at the response to the referendum. And I think very much it's about us continuing the struggle and continuing the fight for equality and equity and recognition. And I think very much it's about non-Indigenous people living in Australia, standing side by side and recognising us as the first peoples of this country, and that we have a voice and that we deserve a platform. So we really like our non-Indigenous brothers and sisters to come down to the exhibition through May, and it is on from the 3rd of May until the 2nd of June, and it's open 7 days a week. We'd love for you to come down or even jump online if you're not able to get to Caulfield and show our artists that you care and that their stories are being listened to, and that you recognise them as having a voice and being a valid citizen of this country. I think that there is no better way of doing it than buying an artwork. But if you're not able to do that, you're also able to leave a message through a guest book that we have on site. And there's also an online guest book, and let our artists know that you're there and that you're listening and that they are heard.
And what are your hopes and goals for the long-term impact of the confined exhibition and, the Torches programs on the criminal justice system and Indigenous communities?
Our long-term vision is very much that Indigenous incarceration rates are reduced to be comparable to the population of Aboriginal people in this country and in this state. Aboriginal people, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people make up just under 1% of the Victorian population, but represent about approximately 10% of the in-prison population. That stat is getting a little bit better, and of course we're really happy to say that the Torch has a part to play in that, and that stat, I'm just saying, it's only getting better for this state, not necessarily, it's worsening across the nation. We are really hoping that the Torch program provides a pathway out of the criminal legal system for our artists, that they see a hope for themselves and for their families, that they're arming themselves with these incredible skills and cultural knowledge that will set themselves up for better employment and for better pathways outside of incarceration. And hopefully that's trickling down to people's families. Flicky is a great example of someone who has connected to their culture in a really major way. Perhaps she can speak more to how connecting to her culture has meant a better outcome for herself outside of, her multiple sentences when she was younger.
Yeah, absolutely. So during my last sentence is when I started asking those questions and started getting some of those answers as to, who I was, where my family comes from, what does culture mean to me, and what my role is in community. And since being released, I've found a place out here in society that I didn't know I had waiting for me, that I'm able to help others and share my stories of, challenging times and how I worked through that and became a better person, and, share my tips and tricks on how to do that. So somebody else might be able to shorten their challenging part of their journeys, and also being able to connect back to to country and family back home has been a massive thing. There was a whole range of support that I didn't realise was out there. I've got family that message me, that support me, that cheer me on. So being a part of this program and being connected to my culture is huge.
Yeah, I'd like to close on that, but I think it's better if I give you the opportunity maybe to give us some closing thoughts or maybe add to the conversation something we may have missed.
If anyone's interested in coming down to Caulfield to Glenara City Council Gallery through the week, our artists are holding tours at 1:30 p.m. on Thursdays and Saturdays. So you can get a one-on-one or group tour of the exhibition and hear from an artist themselves and how painting and creating art has changed the trajectory of their life. And you can speak to them about their own work and learn more about what it is to be Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander in this country today. There's so many works still available. We're really proud to say that we've sold over 150 works already, but we have beautiful works from $80 to $8,000 still available. So there should be something for everyone.
Well, Susanna and Flick, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us on ITV Radio about the 15th edition of Confined.
Thank you for having us.
Now, that was a conversation with Susanna Day, CEO of The Torch, and artist Flick Chefa Smith. This conversation will be published on our website, sbs.com.au/NITV Radio, shortly after the program. We must now step aside for a break, but stay with us, because when we come back, we'll hear the story of a comedian who stunned celebrity handyman. Stay tuned.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Coming up next, conversation between Living Blacks Carla Grant and Biripaiman Andy Saunders, sharing his story on how he went from being a comedian to a celebrity handyman.
Visit sbs.com.au/NITV Radio.
Hello and welcome to Living Black. I'm Carla Grant. We've all seen tradesmen that consider themselves to be comedians, but it's not often you see a comedian become a tradesman. But that's exactly what happened when Biripai man and comic Andy Saunders became a contestant on the reality TV renovation series The Block. I sat down with Andy to hear how he looks for comedy in the most unlikely places.
Welcome my good friend Andy Saunders!
Australia is so welcoming to the Indigenous people of this country. Sometimes I feel like we just belong here. I call this my ScoMo Trump shirt. I call it that because it's a really f***ing off-white. With golden soil and wealth for toil, our home is good. What the f***? Does GERD mean, man? I don't know. Have some respect. We're at a football game, man. Come see. Bye, see. This is a ride for all the black fellas. If you're my cousin, loan me $20. And that's what it's like being Aboriginal, ladies and gentlemen. Have a good night, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, Andy Saunders, welcome to Living Black.
Pleasure to be here.
You've been incredibly successful on the comedy circuit. Did you ever think you'd make it this far?
Oh, goodness. If you asked me when I was in my 20s that I was going to be where I am in comedy today, I would have just laughed in your face and said, you're a better comedian than I am. But I owe my comedy to a lot of things. My comedy was constructed in an Aboriginal lounge room in Taree, in my grandparents' lounge room. And I always say this about all First Nations families' lounge rooms. That's where comedy is created and conceived. And if you want, like, constant comedy and connection and communication through a yarn, just sit in an Aboriginal lounge room for a day. It's so refreshing and so enjoyable.
Well, as you said, you grew up in Taree and in a large family. Mm. You said your life growing up was uncertain. What did you mean by that?
When you grow up in very, very poor settings and, you know, you're borrowing from the neighbour milk and bread and sugar, I think as a kid you interpret things differently, and I thought success was about money and having money. I didn't see success as happiness and love, and we had a lot of that in our family. I think the uncertainty was more about being able to afford things. But being poor, I think, was more a blessing. I think struggle sometimes is a privilege because you can get a lot of lessons out of it, and I'm very grateful for my upbringing.
Did you find cracking jokes helped you to cope?
Absolutely. I mean, comedy for me was a coping mechanism. It was a way I could escape a lot of situations. Our patriarch and matriarch's lounge room was a training ground for a lot of things, but for me in particular, it was to develop jokes. It was to develop my ability to control a crowd, to read a crowd, just to tell a joke in the way that I wanted to tell it.
Family can also be harsh critics as well.
Oh, yeah.
Did you have family members that would, you know, ever make jokes back at your expense?
I've always loved that banter. The banter is what makes you better as a comedian. And it did happen at an early age. I think I was the black sheep of a black family. That's the blackest you can get, I think. I always make this joke that I am, because we're always trying to prove our blackness, you know, on many levels and in many spaces, but I have a joke where I say, I'm the blackest. I'm so black that other black people refer to me as you people. That's the blackest you can get. I love that about comedy. I love how it can provoke thought and create dialogue. And if you write a joke right, it moves the human race in the right direction.
You're a proud Biripi man, having lived in Taree most of your life. Can you tell me what your culture and country mean to you?
I think your identity and being confident in standing in your identity and knowing who you are and where you come from is of utmost importance to any human being on the planet, especially to First Nations people on this island we call Australia. I always instill in my kids the best education you'll ever get is the education about yourself, because if you know yourself, who you are and where you come from, all other learnings are just incidental and they're easy.
Now, it was in Taree that you met Deb, who would go on to be your wife. While you'd been in similar social circles most of your school life, it was after a period overseas that you had a whirlwind romance, moving in together after only 2 weeks of dating.
Yeah.
What was it that attracted you to each other?
Oh, look, she had her own unit, so I thought I'd move in.
She had a place.
I just started moving little bits and pieces of my stuff in there. No, we both grew up in similar backgrounds. She was poor, I was poor. She was from a trawler fishing family. I'm from an estuary fishing family. We went to the same school. Obviously, there was an attraction there. It was a domino effect. A few years later, we sort of connected, and 33 years later, you know, 4 kids and house full of dogs and...
The whole bit.
The whole bit.
Has laughter been the magic and, you know, the key to, you know, the success of the marriage and the union?
It's definitely laughter. Although, you know, I don't make her laugh as much as I used to. She's heard all the jokes, Carl.
Heard it all before
she's
now,
She's heard
Andy.
It all before. Believe it or not, she's wittier than me. She's very, very quick. She's quick-witted. She's quite funny. But we just respect each other and respect that we're both different, but we both bring equal amount of value to the table when it comes to being in a relationship, being partners, parents, friends, and just ride or dies to the end.
Now, you are quite the family man with 4 children, 2 of which you and Deb have fostered, but you never met your own father. So what does fatherhood mean to you?
Oh, goodness. Even though I'd never met my own father, and he passed away a little over a year ago now, I still think that I had a lot of examples of good fathers and father figures around me. I have 7 uncles, and I had a grandfather that was just a pioneer of everything. Everything that's good in me about being a father comes from him. I thank my lucky stars for having good uncles and an unbelievable grandfather, because, yeah, he taught me a lot about being a good dad and a good man.
Now, you've been foster parents now for over 10 years. Mm. Why did you decide to foster children?
I've always been in that sector and I wanted to always give back. Foster parenting is, it's like just being a parent. You give lessons and you definitely learn lessons. And it's all about consistency. But knowing that you're going to fail as well as a parent, and there are always times that you might be disappointed in yourself and times that you're very happy that they're making their own path and making their own way and making decisions about their own life.
Now, amazingly enough, while you were being a foster parent and trying your hand at comedy, you were working at TAFE designing packages for disadvantaged individuals. Mm-hmm. So how did you make that transition from TAFE to the comedy world?
I remember the first time I did comedy was a day before my 30th birthday. And the first crowd I did it to was at the, I think it was a bar on the hill at Newcastle University, and there were 500 people in the room. It was my first experience at raw comedy. We walked into this room and there was just one mic on this tiny stage, and there was a bunch of all of these, you know, young people just waiting for someone to entertain them. It was an out-of-this-world experience, and I was just like, I'm hooked. I want to do this forever. I want to do this properly.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back. Now, about 1 in 10 people across Australia provide unpaid care for a loved one with a disability or an older person, and roughly 304,500 people, that's a big chunk of them, receive the government carer payment. Now, the Albanese government has unveiled changes to the support payment to allow carers greater flexibility in the hours they can work. Penry Buckley reports.
7 years ago, the lives of Christine Rawlinson and her family were thrown into turmoil when her husband Neil was struck down with meningococcal disease. She says he began to feel unwell while they were on a family camping trip.
A day and a half later, he was put into an induced coma. And he didn't wake up until a month after that. And when he woke up, he was informed that he had to have both legs amputated, his fingers and thumbs amputated, and that he'd also acquired 6 sites of brain injury.
Christine has been an unpaid carer for her husband ever since. And she says that has exacted a heavy physical, emotional and financial toll, despite Neil's small disability support pension.
I feel trapped because I need more money, so the obvious thing is for me to go and do more work. But my caring responsibilities aren't going to reduce. I'm not allowed to access the carer payment because I earn too much. So it's a means-tested payment to get the pension. So I only work the 4.5 hours a day, so I don't earn a full living wage. And I don't get access to the carer payment, and I don't even get the healthcare card.
Though Christine isn't on the payment, roughly 300,000 people are, though that's a fraction of the number of carers across the country. 1 in 10 people across Australia provide unpaid care for a loved one with a disability or an elderly relative, which works out to be just under 2.5 million people. For those who do receive the payment, there's some relief on the way when Treasurer Jim Chalmers hands down his third federal budget this month, because it will include changes to eligibility for carer payments. Carers will now be allowed to work 100 hours spread over 4 weeks and still qualify for payments, which can currently be cancelled if the limit of 25 hours a week is exceeded. Social Services Minister Amanda Rishworth says the hours spent on travel time, education and volunteering will no longer be counted in the restrictions.
And what that means is that carers will be able to study when their care requirements permit, or indeed volunteer, without any artificial limits being placed on it.
A 2023 survey by Carers Australia found many carers work fewer hours than they want to and are more likely to be underemployed than the general population. President of Carers South Australia, Philip Martin, says the changes will enable many unpaid carers, for example those on shift work, to plan ahead.
Many carers have expressed frustration that once they exceed the current 25 hours per month, they have to totally reapply for the payment. This initiative would enable them to much more smoothly re-access the carer payment, which is vital for the easing of the cost of living pressures and vital for their work and life satisfaction.
But some critics, including Federal Greens leader Adam Bandt, say that won't go nearly far enough.
Labor can find $50 billion for defence at the drop of a hat, but they can't find enough money to ensure that carers are looked after and have enough money to make ends meet in Labor's cost of living and housing and rental crisis.
Christine Rawlinson is still not eligible for the carer payment, but she says the news is welcome for the many other carers she knows who do receive it. She says the government could be doing more to acknowledge their contribution.
We're just surviving. We're not thriving. We're just doing what we can to get through each day. We're tired. We're tired because we're always on. We're always on, we're always responsible, and there is no downtime.
Penry Buckley, SBS News.
NITV Radio. Share our stories on Facebook.
And that was Bagalang Gaiman by Birds, also featuring Fred Leone. And that's all we have time for on NITV Radio today. You can listen back to the program anytime online or catch any of the stories on our website, sbs.com.au/NITV Radio. NITV Radio will be back on Friday with more stories from right across the country. Bertrand Tungandame, thank you for your company this afternoon. Till next time, bye for now. Yalu.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.